What really gets my dick hard is...
What?
Welcome to Middle of Your Podcast. I'm Ethan Luck.
And I'm Clint Wells, and we are from the future.
The future?
The future, I tell you.
What do you mean?
All right, here's the deal, guys. We're about 2 years in the Middle of Your Podcast. If you're joining us for the first time, you're obviously dipped into episode one. We want to thank you for stopping by, but we wanted to basically catch you up a little bit because we're at least 100 episodes in.
Right.
And the quality has gotten better. Almost everything across the board's gotten better. I'm not saying the first few episodes aren't good.
They're pretty rad.
They're pretty great.
Yeah. Yay us.
There are a few things to be mindful of.
Things that are coming up along your journey of these 100 plus episodes, you're going to hear some things that might ruffle your feathers a little bit.
For example, if in episode 14 I'm crunching on my ice too much, please know that it's been a couple of years since then, and we've gotten a lot of feedback, and I no longer crunch on ice. That's just one small example.
Another example I can think of just off the top of my head is... I foolishly, on an S&M episode, I said that the Outlaw Torn wasn't on that record.
Right. Ethan got a track listing error wrong, and it's, as you will come to find out, dear listener, it's become quite the hallmark, comedic hallmark of the show.
It has, yeah.
The show's taken on a life of its own. We're really glad you're on the ride, and we just wanted to introduce ourselves from the goddamn future.
From the future.
Now, here we go. Back to our former selves, episode one of Metal Up Your Podcast.
Enjoy. Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast, episode one. My name is Ethan Luck.
And I'm Clint Wells.
And we're Metallica fans, just like you. We know more than you, and we know less than you.
And everything in between.
Hopefully. And if we don't know that, you can let us know.
Yeah.
But we just want to give you guys an intro episode, because, we want you to know who we are, how we got into Metallica, how we became friends. Just an introductory episode about us. So essentially, we started this because there's no other Metallica podcast out there that we know of. Let us know if there is. I couldn't find one. And we're both big Metallica fans. It's like our common bond. It's how me and Clinton met. And we thought long and hard about this for a few months, and we said, fuck it, let's start a Metallica podcast about everything Metallica.
That's right.
And that's, you know, you can tell the listeners how we met, and because it revolves around Metallica.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. We were playing a show. I was playing a show with Matthew Mayfield here in Nashville. And we have all these mutual friends. And when they asked if we knew who each other were, I guess they were all flabbergasted that we had not crossed paths before. And so we were all sitting at a table. And they said, Ethan and Clint, you guys, it's amazing you guys aren't friends. Just start talking about Metallica.
And I think you asked me something like Cliff or Jason.
Yeah.
Something like that, and then I went into why, like, I loved, you know, Cliff Burton,
right?
And you went into why you love Jason, and all of a sudden they start cracking up because, yeah, see, we told you guys would totally hit it off. You love Metallica.
Yeah, I think it was like, I don't think we stopped talking for like 45 minutes.
No, probably not. No, everyone else kind of carried on their own conversation, and we just kept going.
It is funny how when you are introduced to someone who is touted as another massive Metallica fan, there's a few questions right off the bat where you can really get a good pulse.
Totally.
Cliff and Jason, that's a great starter.
Yeah. Justice or Puppets.
Yeah, exactly. And I think one of mine, and this will probably be a recurring theme on this podcast for me, is I do think one of my first questions for you is where you stood on the Load Reload records.
Yeah, totally. Which we will definitely have an episode on both those records.
For sure.
And a Versus record. We could have a Load Versus Reload record, but...
Because you can learn a lot about a Metallica fan by how they would answer that question.
Absolutely, you can. And that's, you know, just for those of you listening, to give you an idea of where this podcast is going to go, excuse me, we're gonna cover the whole map, all things Metallica. Expect everything from albums to producers to gear to tours to all those things, you know, and feel free to email us at metalupyourpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what we're missing. Let us know what we could add. Don't bother telling us, do Saint Anger. You know, we're going to do that.
We have to do Saint Anger.
Absolutely, we have to. Gosh, we could probably even do a couple parts of Saint Anger. Well, we're definitely going to do Saint Anger, and we're going to do some kind of monster, because that's a masterpiece.
Yeah, we have to do it.
Yeah.
You know, if we're not going to turn this into a Saint Anger podcast, but I would venture to say that if we got that documentary out of the making of that record, it was all worth it.
Absolutely.
All worth it.
All worth it. I don't know how you guys feel listening in your cars or at home or wherever you're listening, but I remember, I'll only go into this for a brief moment because we're going to have an episode about it, but I remember watching that documentary just with my head just hanging low. Like, I was so bummed, but the more I watched it, the more I loved it.
Yeah.
So we'll get into all that kind of stuff. Like I said, just giving an idea where we're going with this, but we thought, again, we're going to let you guys get to know us a little bit. So I think we should start by, Clint, how did you get into Metallica?
Yeah, so I'm 33. I was born in 1983 when they were putting out their first record. So obviously I unfortunately wasn't hip to it when I was a wee baby.
Really?
I know, that's surprising. Well, I guess like many people, I was turned on Metallica through the wide, wide arms of the Black Album, which was a turning point for the band. It opened them up to tons of people that had never heard of them. It's probably one of the first songs I learned how to play on guitar. I was Enter Sandman. So that record was real important, probably just because it was everywhere. I'm sure you remember. I mean,
absolutely, yeah.
That record just kind of wouldn't go away.
Yeah, and I'm sure most people that were, you know, not only alive, but at the age where they bought records, knew where they were when it came out, where they bought it.
For sure. I mean, hearing hearing the first little intro segment of Enter Sandman is like still imprinted on my mind.
Oh yeah, totally.
One of the greatest, coolest metal songs of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. That's still a song that I can think of in my head and pretty much tune my guitar to.
Yeah.
I've just played it that many times.
Oh, you know? Hopefully if you're tuning to E flat.
Yeah. Well, on record, it's E.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's E.
Is it?
Yes.
I thought they were like straight up E flat for their whole career.
No.
What, did they ever do E flat?
I mean, eventually. I mean, like Sabbath True was in a different tuning. Stuff
right.
Like that
was tuned down like a whole
almost
step
everything, you know, until the Black Album was E standard.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you mentioned tuning your guitar. So for me, the Black Album was when I sort of came online, but when they really became my band, because of my age and just the time that all this was happening, was definitely Load and Reload, which I know is just such a, it's a very divisive couple of years there with the boys.
Yeah,
but
someone listening right now is just cussing at their computer right now. They're like, fuck you, dude.
Well, luckily the story doesn't end at Load and Reload.
Thank God.
But, you know, I remember like learning The Memory Remains and, you know, going to sleep to that record. I'm more of a Reload guy than a Load guy, but Fuel and Memory Remains and Devil's Dance and Until It Sleeps and even the ballad stuff, Hero of the Day and Low Man's Lyric, Mama Said. I thought those records were just rich, you know. I thought they had a lot to offer.
Yeah.
And then, of course, learning from my more experienced buds that wasn't the coolest shit that on offer for Metallica, I made this sort of beautiful journey that I wish I could do again through all the early records, you know. And then just was super hooked. I was in one of my first little bands in high school was a Metallica tribute band.
What were you guys called?
We didn't really, strangely, never even had a name. Never even got that far.
Okay.
Because we never performed outside of our parents' garage. But just like sort of endless hours scrutinizing over the complexities of playing one.
Yeah.
And doing it without messing up, like getting through it without messing up.
Yeah.
You know, just that discipline that came from
that. That was
band.
So fun, that learning that kind of stuff back then.
Were you able to like play, did you learn the Kirk stuff too, or were you?
Some of the Kirk stuff. I'm a pretty tall dude. I have huge hands. I tried and tried and tried. My hands could never move that fast.
Yeah.
You know, with any of the metal bands I listen to, or Megadeth or Slayer, all that stuff, like, there's some stuff I could definitely do and sometimes even fake. But I was always such a Hetfield fan that I was just determined to learn all those rhythm parts because they were, I mean, he wrote some of the best riffs in metal.
100% agree.
Ever, you know?
To this day, he's, you know, he's probably, I don't know, it's tough between him and Jason, but he's definitely the main dude for me in Metallica.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I was always more fascinated by his rhythm than the lead. I mean, I love lead guitar. I love all that. Yeah. I love all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I was always more fascinated by what James was doing.
And singing over it.
And singing.
If you listen to like some of the riffs on Justice, and he's singing a totally different melody and rhythm over it.
Unbelievable.
It's amazing. Yeah, totally.
Unbelievable stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's a good lead player, too. I mean,
he does Nothing Else Matters.
Nothing Else Matters, yeah. And you know, he could rip into some stuff too.
Oh, definitely, yeah. He's a good drummer too.
What can't he do?
Seriously, that's the reason that Bob Rock called him the Mighty Hetfield.
The Mighty Hetfield.
Well, I got I'm a little older than you. I'm 38. I was 5 when Kill 'Em All came out. Hmm. So not old enough to really get
it. Your parents
it.
Wouldn't put in that in the old stocking stuffer.
No, there was no Kill 'Em All vinyl in for Christmas. We're going to kill all of you. I was living in Long Beach, California. I was 10 years old. It was 1988. Mm-hmm. And my parents, we just got cable. And MTV was on, and I had gotten into Bon Jovi and some of the glam rock bands because I thought that was like metal. I didn't even really know what metal was, but I thought that was kind of hard and heavy. Mm-hmm. And I was watching MTV like at night as a 10-year-old, and the One video came on, their very first video they ever made. And I was kind of scared.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
all black and white, and they had all the surgery scenes.
It was, Johnny Got Your Gun, the film that they'd spliced together.
It was gross, like, you know, yeah. like the stitching thread in the face, and it just terrified me.
Yeah.
But I was hooked on the music. I was like, this is so cool. What is this? I had no idea. And, you know, I would ask some friends at school, and nobody really knew who they were. And it was probably like, I'd say a year later, when my family moved down to Orange County, California, I became friends, it was about a year or so later with some like metalheads at my school. You know, I saw a kid with like a Metallica shirt on. I was like, oh my gosh, I've never seen a Metallica shirt in person. This is so awesome. And they were like, oh dude, you got to listen. That's like their new stuff. Like, you know, there's records before that you got to get into. And yeah. So I saved up allowance money and went to the mall with a friend one time, there's a music store called Sam Goody. And I bought Master of Puppets because back then you could go in there and they had like demo CDs and demo cassettes. Mm-hmm. That you could take up to the listening station. And I found the Metallica section, saw Justice for All, saw everything before that, and I saw the Master of Puppets cover, and I was like, that's so badass. So I grabbed that one first, and I listened to it, and I was like, holy shit.
Is that what did it for you, rather than Ride the Lightning or Kill 'Em All? Is like you liked the cover of Puppets?
Yeah, totally. I mean, because I had heard one, and I think I'd heard a couple other songs through friends, because I didn't own any of their stuff. So when I finally went to the record store, flipping through those covers, that's the one that grabbed me. I was like, oh my gosh, look at that like graveyard of all the crosses and mm-hmm. like, you know, the like
the marionette
totally
thing.
Yeah,
so good.
Yeah, it's great. And so I mean, listening to that, I was, you know, I'd already started playing guitar at that point, so I could tell that it was very musical. It wasn't just like, you know, they were a thrash metal band, but you know, I was already excited that I could like show it to my dad and be like, listen to how good these guitar players are.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, I would say like my, you know, my introduction was the One video, but like what really got me hooked was Master of Puppets, which is probably why that I would say is my favorite record.
Right.
You know, but yeah, I mean, it totally changed like everything in my life.
Yeah.
Like the way I was thinking, the way I was playing guitar, I immediately, I went to the music store. I took guitar lessons and I bought the Master of Puppets tab book.
Oh yeah, I had those.
Which I still had until a couple of years ago, and I loaned it to a friend, and he moved back to California. Asshole.
He's still just sitting there learning Metallica songs with that book.
He's probably
right now.
Yeah, totally.
He's learning battery.
He's still trying to do the harmonic on Sanitarium. He's like, I can't get it.
It's funny that One was kind of your way in, too, because for me, I was already sort of in the super melodic, more pop-oriented Metallica
right.
that some fans really struggle with who were there from the beginning. But it going back for me, and obviously I have the benefit of retrospect and hindsight, but they were still to me the greatest thrash metal band ever. But
course,
they
yeah.
always suggested something more than that. Whether it was Fade to Black or, you know, you mentioned Sanitarium,
yeah.
your hook was One, which One is super thrashy, but for, you know, a large chunk of it, it's kind of a mellow, creepy,
yeah.
clean. You know, brooding thing. It's
totally.
Not very not thrashy.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons they sort of endured is because they always suggested something bigger than that.
Totally.
Right?
I mean, they were always different. I mean, like, I think their riffs were way better than most of the thrash bands in that early 80s, you know, especially the U.S. Thrash thing. But, you know, Hetfield from the first record like had songs like
yeah.
there's catchy choruses on Kill 'Em All
right
and every record, and like you said, they did experiment early on with mild ballad type things
right.
you know, I mean, even listen to like the bridge of Four Horsemen
mm-hmm.
you know, when Kirk
right.
Solo comes in, it's like it goes to halftime and it's like this melodic really cool part
right.
it's really pretty, you know, even though it's all distorted and stuff, but it's like it's almost, and I know people are going to be so pissed off when I say this, when people get pissed off about Metallica, whether it's the Black Album was their last straw, or Load and Reload, and they're like, oh, they don't play thrash anymore. It's like, well, yeah, they play way less of it. If, you know, and especially like the Black Album, there's no thrash anymore, but they've been hinting at that for all their records,
right?
In my opinion.
Sure.
You know, like you said, Fade to Black. I mean, it's a ballad until right. the end.
Right. Well, and like, don't you want a band to like evolve and grow? I mean, this, and that includes something like Saint Anger, or for some folks, Load and Reload, but
yeah.
I don't know if I would want to hear the Master of Puppets Part 6. Like, they wrote it and it kicks ass.
A lot of fans do, you know, which is probably why they're so, you know, a lot of people are so stoked on the new record,
because oh,
there's
yeah.
a bunch of thrash stuff.
Myself
on there.
Included, yeah.
Totally. And I love, you know, the thing is, I love the fast stuff probably more so than anything, because it's what I first listened to. It's what got me into Metallica. But as a musician of, you know, I've been playing guitar since I was 10 years old.
Mm hmm.
You know, and I've grown as a musician and learned other styles. I know multiple instruments. You know, I play everything from metal to reggae to country to whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I always got really excited when they tried new things. You know, Load and Reload, I was a little like, oh, shit, what's this?
Mm-hmm.
But as time went on, I you know, kept listening to it and was like, man, you know what? They're getting a little experimental for what, you know, they came from. But they're trying new things and they're evolving, you know?
Yeah.
The Beatles evolved, you
sure.
know?
All of my favorite bands did that.
Totally.
And
except the Ramones. The Ramones did the same thing for so long.
True.
But it worked.
AC/DC, they're still cranking out that same record.
There's,
and I love and it
and
for sure. Know,
and it works.
And it's
bands
great.
Like that,
they,
it can totally work.
But Metallica was just destined to be bigger than that, I believe. You know,
totally.
To throw a bone to maybe some of the other thrashy metalheads out there, you know, people will compare Reign and Blood to Master of Puppets. Like, they pit them against one another,
right.
Which one's thrashier. And I'm a big Slayer fan, too. I mean, if you listen to those records back to back, it is clear that Reign in Blood is faster, more brutal,
yeah,
way scarier. I mean, but I like that record less, you know?
Yeah.
I like that Master Puppets has Sanitarium, you know, in
yeah.
some, like, quiet moments and creepy moments. And
totally.
There was also even something, like, literate about them, like Ride the Lightning with the For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Yeah.
The sort of Hemingway stuff, and
yeah,
it was like it seemed smarter or something.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I mean, even in the '80s, like, I mean, Hetfield was pulling stuff from like biblical stuff. I mean,
yeah,
creeping,
yeah.
Death.
Creeping death.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, which, you know, like, if you that's become a little sillier as I've gotten older.
Yeah,
the sort of super epic biblical shit, you know.
Yeah,
but that stuff works great in metal.
Totally does. Yeah.
I mean, Creeping Death, pound for pound, might be my favorite Metallica song.
Really?
Maybe.
I mean, it's an amazing song.
I mean, it might be.
That's one thing that, like, you know, with other friends who were Metallica fans that I've talked about for years, it's like, well, you know, I could say that Master Puppets is my favorite Metallica record.
Mm-hmm.
There was a point where it was neck and neck with Justice.
Mm.
But favorite Metallica song?
Mm.
That's so hard. Like,
what if you did a top three in no order?
In no order?
Yeah.
I would probably have to say, in no order, Dyer's Eve.
Yeah. Last track on Justice.
Yes. So good.
So good.
I'm still convinced that there was someone in the studio catching Lars's cymbals on the bump, 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 bump. Lars, if you're listening, let us know.
Oh, he's listening.
Oh, he's listening for sure. He's selling art and listening to this.
so you got Dyer's Eve.
I'd say Dyer's Eve, Battery.
Battery killer.
It's so good. And I would maybe, oh man, I'd say Four Horsemen.
Yeah,
you know,
that's strong.
I mean, I'm doing, you know, two off Puppets and one off Kill 'Em All. I mean, I don't know, God. I mean, I mean, I love My Friend of Misery.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
that's an amazing song. It has a B bender part on it.
Oh, does it?
Yes, the bridge.
Oh, okay.
That little bendy clean part.
That's right. Well, speaking of B bender. One of my top three for sure is The Unforgiven 2.
Very underrated, The Unforgiven 2 and 3.
Very underrated. I mean, well, it was a single, I guess, but...
What did you think? Now, did you look at the track listing before you actually put the record on? Because I know that when I saw that record, I saw The Unforgiven 2, I was like, really? Part 2?
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I had no idea that Hetfield intended to do three of them.
Oh, I didn't know he originally intended that.
Yeah, I remember hearing that in an interview with him in the Death Magnetic era.
Okay.
intended it to be like a trilogy, I guess.
Well, like Load Through Reload, 95 to like 98, I was in so deep, and the Black Album was still so fresh for me too. I mean, I was just sort of consuming it all at rapid pace. So I didn't have like a super close tether to Unforgiven. I just liked it. I thought it kicked ass. To know that there was like some sort of continuation, and it was this sort of really pretty B-bender. And I liked the lyric more in Unforgiven too than Unforgiven. I felt like I understood it more.
Sure.
And I liked the video where he's like standing on that like rock mountain.
Yeah.
Like in hell or something.
Which, by the way, we're going to cover music videos too in this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have an episode on just one, just Enter Sandman, Unforgiven, right, all that stuff.
Yeah, so Unforgiven 2 is definitely up there. I didn't know that he also did a B-bender on My Friend Misery.
Yeah, side note, as a musician, my dad pointed it out because I was trying to figure out that song, and he listened to it. He was like, oh, that's a B-bender. And my dad had a telly at the time with a B-bender, and he figured it out for me, like showed me it was like an A2, and you just, you know, push that neck down, get that sound.
You want to talk about the ultimate alienation of Metallica, some Metallica fans? Thinking about Unforgiven 2, James messing around with a Telecaster B-bender, Mama Said, Low Man's Lyric. James has got a country record in him.
I really think he does. I've said this to friends, that if he ever does a solo record, I would imagine it'd be a bit of a country record.
Yeah.
Not like modern country, like bullshit like Florida Georgia Line, like a cool country record.
Yeah, yeah. There would be riots in the streets.
I mean, just like imagine for a sec if he did a really cool, raw-sounding country record with, like, T-Bone Burnett.
Oh, man.
It'd be amazing.
Dang. I would love that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would be incredible. I don't know if Lars would let it happen, but...
Have to run it all by Lars.
Yeah,
nothing
apparently
gets through Lars.
Don't worry, everybody. We'll do a Lars episode. Maybe even a part 2 and 3.
Oh, man. How can we not talk about all the things to love and hate and be so frustrated by with that guy?
I mean, it's pretty endless. There could be an entire Lars podcast.
Yeah.
Just about him.
Well, Lars, again, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on.
Yeah, anytime, man. You know, I know you're about to start a new album cycle with Hardwired, but if you got some time, or if you guys play Nashville, have a day off, you are more than welcome to come over to my house, live over here in East Nashville, and just come into my garage studio. We can call it, you know, Garage Days. And we'd love to have you on, Lars.
Do you think that... Do you think it matters that they're making a thrash record now? Like, do you think that it's just too much time has passed and too much has happened between them and their fans? I mean, I know I still care. I got it on vinyl the other day. I know you and I have had very excited conversations about this record. It's one of the reasons that this podcast is so interesting, is because, like, I want to know more about what the Metallica community is thinking about
stuff like this.
I wonder, you know, I wonder if it's too much has happened, you know?
I mean, in my opinion... There's other bands out there that have screwed their careers way more than Metallica, and still people are following them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Metallica, in my opinion, you know, and a lot of people disagree that don't like Load and Reload or even maybe the Black Album. You know, I have a friend who lives here in Nashville named Jeff, who he gave up on the Black Album. He's like, fuck that. It's not thrash.
Mm-hmm.
And even him... I think we were texting about it when they first released Hardwired as a single. He texted me, he's like, dude, this is amazing. Like, he's still paying attention.
Great.
I think they're the kind of band that no matter when they put out a record, the Metallica you love personally, you hope that's on there.
Yeah.
And when it's not, you're pissed off.
Right.
You know.
Or disappointed or...
Totally. I think with this record, they could have done whatever they wanted as far as, like, you know, made another shitty sounding Saint Anger with a crappy snare and all that stuff. But it's been 8 years since Death Magnetic. Mm. I think.
Wow. God.
Isn't that crazy?
Damn.
Yeah. Oh, wait.
Whoa.
I remember like doing the same thing I did with this record, like sitting down, like, okay, we're coming off Saint Anger. This has got to be good, you know? And I love that record, but.
My wife at the time, I'd bought Death Magnetic. And I guess between Death Magnetic and Saint Anger, it was, what, 5 years?
Oh, 03 to 08, yeah.
And they had debuted Cyanide, or not, yeah, they debuted Cyanide at some live shows, and but it was hard to tell because it was live, and James's voice was a little dicey. And I remember my sweet wife had gone to bed, and I put in Death Magnetic, and just immediately was like, oh my God, this is like, and I remember cranking it, and my wife comes in. She's like, what are you doing? Like, turn it down. And I was just telling my wife, they're back.
They're back. They're they're here.
Because it sounded like Justice, you know? I mean, it sounded like 80s Metallica to me.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, I guess I expected a little more coming out of Rick Rubin.
Yeah,
but
me
I also
too.
Know
I did
that,
too.
And, but I also know, and you've probably heard these stories too, is that he's not really involved in records like you think he is.
Hands off.
He shows up like once a week and goes, you know, sits in a yoga pose and goes, delete it or, you know, whatever, like, delete that. You know, so it's essentially Metallica and an engineer.
Right.
You know, but that's what they did on this new record.
Yeah.
You know, I think that one, I don't know, Death Magnetic, a lot of people that I know didn't like it, but there's a couple, I think, track skippers.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even say track skippers, songs I just don't care for as much. I'll still listen to the whole thing. You know, the main thing that bugs me about that record, I think, is just the little Larsisms, you know, little things like, man, you don't need to be playing eighth notes on that crash part.
Right.
You could play quarter notes and there would be so much more groove to it. Little things like that. But it's Lars. He's set in his ways. He's going to do his thing.
Do you think that Bob Rock will ever have another opportunity to helm the old ship there with Metallica?
I kind of hope so.
Yeah, I think that would be fun.
I would love, well, speaking of Death Magnetic and Bob Rock, I've often said to other friends, I would love to hear Death Magnetic with like 90s Bob Rock production.
Right.
I think that would have been an incredible record.
Like the dude who made Black Album, but with those songs at that time in the band's career.
Yeah, I mean, not the exact production, but you know, like in the 90s, Bob Rock had that, there was that big, heavy Metallica sound, like big, thuddy, clicky kick drum, really cracky, awesome snare drum, you know, good Hetfield vocals. I would love to hear that production of Death Magnetic.
Yeah.
I think that'd be pretty cool.
I would too.
When did you first see Metallica, by the way?
I saw them on the Summer Sanitarium Tour. I believe it was 2000.
Okay.
I was a senior in high school. And as most seniors in high schools, we didn't have much money or availability to see a band like Metallica.
Yeah.
But they were playing at the Georgia Dome in Atlanta, which I grew up in Birmingham, Alabama. And we had our tickets. We put on our Metallica uniforms, our various and Justice for All t-shirts.
Absolutely.
It was a Summer Sanitarium Tour where the openers were, it was sort of like a festival. It was Power Man 5000, System of a Down, Korn, Kid Rock, and Metallica.
Kid Rock was direct support.
Direct support.
Ba with a ba.
And needless to say, we were much snobbier in those days, and we were not big fans of any of those bands. Because there was a point when you're young where Metallica is just like all you can see in the horizon.
Of course, yeah.
And so we were like, man, we have to sit through a bunch of bands we don't like.
Right.
Of course, those bands were charming and like kind of kicked ass in their own ways, and we were all just so stoked to be there, right? So it was a long day of watching that. Kid Rock came out and throughout his whole show, like an inflatable middle finger came up on the stage.
I mean, you got to pull out all the tricks to, you know, if you're opening for Metallica.
So check this out, dude. So it comes time for Metallica. It's like finally 9 o'clock or whatever. And we're waiting and waiting and they don't come out. They don't come out. This is our first time seeing Metallica and we're at the peak of our just freak out about this band. We see Jason, Kirk, and Lars come out with the lights on. No Ecstasy of Gold. They just walk out on stage. Kirk's wearing a fucking cowboy hat. And I remember looking looking at my best friend at the time and saying, Kirk's wearing a fucking cowboy hat. And my friend goes, dude, this isn't good. So they come out and they're like, hey, we're really sorry to let you guys know this, but James, he pulled some discs in his back water skiing today.
Oh no.
So James can't be here. So we're going to honor the tickets. We're going to come back in a few months and play a show for you. But since we're all here, we're going to play a show and we're just going to have special guests sing all night.
Okay.
First three songs out of the gate, Seek and Destroy, Creeping Death, and I can't remember the third one. Maybe it was just those two. Jason sang lead vocals.
Really?
And murdered it.
Awesome.
He kicked ass. And I remember thinking, like, man, if we can see, like, 90 minutes of Jason fronting Metallica, like, I'm in.
And he probably could have done the whole set if he wanted to.
He could have, but so here's what they did. So then for Master of Puppets, which was the song after that, they brought a fan on stage.
Oh, wow.
And I remember Jason looking at him in the eye, and he's like, do you know this song?
Yeah.
And of course, the excited fan's like, yeah, yeah. Guy gets up there and sucked.
every fan, it's in the front row when Jason Newsted says, "Do you know this song?"
They're going to say, yeah, I do. Yeah, of course I do. Yeah. They throw him off stage, started it, brought another fan up, and Jason's like, "Man, you better fucking know it. Like, let's do this, you know? This fucking kid killed it." So it immediately we were like, okay, this is a pretty unique Metallica experience.
Was like the crowd like into all this?
Yeah, everyone was in.
I guess it's better than them leaving.
There was just something about letting Jason sing the first two songs that just got every... Because, you know, Jason's just a fan favorite. I don't know anyone that doesn't like Jason Newsted.
I'm sure somebody listening doesn't like him.
Maybe.
But
well, let us know. I would love to hear about that.
Yeah, if you have a genuine hatred of Jason Newsted... Please email us.
There's someone with like a sticker on the back of their car with Echo Brain with like an anti line
totally.
Through it. There's some. If you're out there with that sticker, please email us.
Yeah, we would love to have you as a guest on our podcast and have it like us versus you versus Jason.
Unfortunately, we're already in the first four songs, and that was the highlight of the show because then they brought out Kid Rock.
Ooh, what did he sing? Do you remember?
He did "Sad But True" because that year he had a big hit with a song called "American Badass"
with that,
which
sample.
Was a sample of "Sad But True."
That's right.
Which me and my friends. Absolutely hated.
Oh yeah, I didn't like that. I don't like any Kid Rock song. But...
Exactly. We just thought it was so beneath Metallica.
Yeah.
Jonathan Davis from Korn came out and did "One," which was interesting.
Okay.
But not great.
Okay.
I mean, think about it. It was sprung on those dudes that day too.
Totally.
And they're all just big Metallica fans, so they were like, "Whatever we can do to help."
Yeah, absolutely.
And then they did.
You would do it too if you were in the opening band. You're like, "I'll sing one."
Yeah, I would.
Like, I don't. I mean. I'll sing, yeah, sure.
I would do anything I could.
Yeah.
So that was a really strange show. We were all kind of bummed. And then we saw them, they came back 2 months later. We all went back. It was one of the coolest shows I've ever seen.
Same openers? Like it was the same tour?
Nope, because it was a makeup show for James being sick, okay. So it was just Metallica.
No opener?
Lakeland Amphitheater in Atlanta.
That's awesome.
Lakewood Amphitheater.
That's awesome.
And they killed. All it had was just the four solo screens of their faces.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. I mean, they did. It was like a greatest that Summer Sanitarium tour. They weren't touring a record.
Yeah,
they were just touring to be out working and making money, maybe. So totally. It was just kind of like greatest hits world,
which is awesome. Like
it was amazing.
Yeah, as a huge fan, that's what you want. I mean,
so those are my two times to see them. Tell me about your Metallica. When was your live Metallica cherry?
Well, I'm a bit ashamed to say that I've been a fan since '88. And I didn't see them till 2009.
Oh boy!
Or was it? Oh wait, it was early. Oh, I almost said 2010. Early 2010. I believe it was 2009. Early 2010.
Death Magnetic Tour.
Death Magnetic Tour. I was with my old band. I played drums in, and we were doing a tour opening for Paramore in Australia. Paramore's tour manager, this guy Andrew, used to work for Metallica, and I saw that they were playing in Brisbane, Australia, on my birthday, and we had a day off.
Oh, boy.
And so I hit up Andrew like a couple shows before. I was like, "Hey, man, could you hook something up? Like, if not, it's cool. Like, I'll buy tickets. Like, I've never seen Metallica because every time they came through California or Nashville when I moved here, I was always on tour or it was just way too early and I was too young. Maybe my parents would let me go or I just couldn't afford it or something.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, after all these years,
I'm surprised you didn't go to the Kill 'Em All tour when you were five.
I was really trying hard, but I just couldn't get out of kindergarten that day. Andrew was like, "Oh yeah, I'll make a call." The next day, we're in like Sydney or something, and I'm walking backstage to the dressing room, and he walks up to me. He's like, "Hey, Ethan." I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "Hey, we're all good for Metallica. How many guys want to come?" I was like, "I don't know." I'm like, "Let me get back to you in like an hour." So I go hit up all of our dudes and like two of our guys wanted to go. My wife was with me on the trip. So she came and,
rad.
Oh dude, it was, and we got like VIP treatment because like Andrew worked for them. So we get to Brisbane for our day off at the hotel and it's my birthday. We go out to lunch. Like I'm on cloud nine. Like I'm going to see Metallica for the first time for my birthday for free. Someone in their camp like sends a van to pick us all up. We drive to the arena, pulling backstage, like head of security, like meets us outside, says hi to Andrew, walks us all backstage, gives us tour, you know, credentials.
Mm-hmm.
And we're straight up like walking down the hallway. And like, I see all the like things that I've seen in behind the scenes videos,
like,
you know,
with like the curtains up and
totally. I see like the door to the tuning room.
Yeah.
I see like I can't remember what it's called. It was like the Metalla Lounge or something.
Right.
And that's where they took us. He was like, He's like, I'm going to take you down to the lounge. There's like a bar there. Help yourself some drinks. Like, just chill there until the show. We're like, cool. And as we're walking down the hallway, all of a sudden I hear like bass, but it's not like behind a closed door. And I look to my left at this open door and I see like a dude turned out to be Robert's tech. And as I'm, and I hear bass, but he's not playing. Then all of a sudden, as I'm walking by, I look to my left and there's Robert like checking out one of his new basses. I was like, fuck, there's
was
Robert.
Was he squatting down while he was looking at the bass?
He wasn't, you know, he wasn't doing the crab walk. But I was just like, I mean, my whole like childhood, even with that guy, like,
yeah,
you know, was right in front of me. I was like, fuck, Suicidal Tendencies, Infectious Grooves, like right. Ozzy, like, it was just so cool. And so we hung out in the lounge, had a bunch of drinks. And then like, as we're sitting there, it was like maybe 30 minutes before we were going to go out. Lamb of God was opening, which was awesome.
Oh, rad.
So we were about to go out to watch Lamb of God and we're finishing a drink. And all of a sudden I see all these dudes, like these big, like burly, like Aussies, all in like these motorcycle club t-shirts. I'm sorry, Hot Rod Club t-shirts. And I was like, oh, I wonder if like, because I know Hetfield's in Hot Rods. I wonder if they're like part, like a chapter he's a part of or something. Then all of a sudden, like in walks Hetfield.
Oh, man.
And like my buddies from my band are like, dude, you should go talk to him. And I already met him at this point at an airport once. And I was like, I don't want to just like walk up to him. He was talking to like his Hot Rod buddies. And then once he finished talking to them, he like split because he probably was going to warm up or something. But yeah. And then we got, they were doing the in the round thing, like the center of the arena. They had all the coffins up in the lighting truss that came down and had lights in them and stuff. And we were sitting behind their front of house guy. And, behind this barricade with all the space in the world and not like crammed in, you know, like a commoner.
Right. So,
and we just, like I said, we got the royal treatment and we were just sitting there right next to their front of house guy. He's been there since the '80s. And like, I'm like, this is my first time seeing Metallica and they're playing like all these songs I love. And I love Death Magnetic. They didn't play anything else. Saint Anger, which I was stoked about.
Yeah. Do they ever, I mean, do they do
every
Frantic
once in a
or...
while, as far as, I mean, I don't research every single set list from every show, but
oh, bummer.
There was a period that I would watch stuff online and I wouldn't see him play that stuff.
Yeah.
But I have seen them play like Frantic, or Saint Anger, like,
yeah, those are the two, I guess, that
those
made
would
it
be the two
through.
Yeah, totally.
You should definitely tell your which, by the way, I love that story on your birthday, because it's like the rock gods, the metal gods were just like chose you that day.
I feel
to
like
bestow
did
upon you.
I really feel like
their
they did
favor.
Yeah,
you should tell the story about when you met James. How long before this show was that?
That would have been let's see, I lived in Nashville in 01 to 03. It would have been 03.
Yeah.
So it was the year that Saint Anger came out.
Yeah.
I don't know what Hetfield was doing in Orange County, but it was at John Wayne Airport, and the band I was in at the time, we were flying out to do a show in like wherever, Dallas or something. And it was a super early morning flight. It was like, you know, I was at the airport like 5 in the morning. So I'm in the security line, which is like down the hallway, like so long. And this is way before iPhones and stuff. I had a little flip phone, but I, you know, I could text. It was like a kind of a new thing. And I was sitting there with like my guitar and my backpack and looking for the other guys in my band. And I turn around to see if they're behind me in line. And who's the next person in line? James Hetfield.
In the normal commoner line.
The normal ass line. So thinking back, I don't know if it was, you know, because during the whole making of St. Anger's, when he got sober, I don't know if maybe it was close enough to that where like that was part of the sobriety. Like, hey, no private jets, none of this stuff. Like, you're just going to fly coach back to San Francisco or whatever. But yeah, I texted my then girlfriend, now wife, because she was up early working. I was like, James Hetfield is standing behind me in the security line, and I probably still have a good 40 minutes in this line. What do I do?
Amazing.
It's the only time I've really panicked when meeting like somebody famous.
Yeah.
I've walked up to plenty of people in airports and stuff. Like, hey, I love your music.
Right.
I met Ringo Starr the other day at an event I was working, and I was totally chill.
Right.
But Hetfield's behind me, and I was like, oh my God. So I text her, and she's like, just say hi. I was like, oh, okay. I felt like Chris Farley interviewing Paul McCartney.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Remember that time you went to rehab?
Remember Load? but, yeah, so I turned around and I just kind of leaned in. At this point, it's like 5:45 in the morning.
Oh, God.
I'm totally being an asshole. I turn around and I say, hey, excuse me, James. And he was like, yeah, man. I was like, hey, man, I'm sorry to bother you this early in the morning, but, you know, I've been a fan for a long time and you know, pretty much you and my dad are the reason I do what I do for a living now. You're the reason I've learned how to play guitar and got to this point as a musician where it's my job. And he was like, oh man, that's so cool, you know? And we chatted for a few minutes and asked me where I was going and asked where he was going. He had this big old stone looking guy of a security guard with him who was shorter than him, but could probably break both of us in half real quick. And after just a couple minutes of chatting, I had, you know, a really good quality camera on my flip phone.
Yeah, of course. I said,
hey man, would it be all right to, actually, I'm sorry. I turned around first and was like, I said goodbye to him, like shook my hand. Have a good flight. And then I was that guy. A couple minutes later, I was like, I should ask for a photo. Fuck it. I'm just going to do it. And I turned around and was like, hey, James. And he's like, yeah. And I was like, would we already get a photo? And the security guy was like, no photos. And knowing what I know now about, I mean, I was touring then, but like touring with bigger bands now, like I know that like that that's just not, you don't do that.
Yeah.
And there's a no photo policy, especially in public, because then it draws a crowd and this and that.
Of course.
But I didn't know that at the time. I was just like, you know, 10-year-old me was like, Hetfield.
Well, and now you know, like, at least you asked, because you would always wonder if you hadn't at least asked.
Totally. He did, although, offer me another handshake as a replacement.
What a consolation.
He really did. I said, can I get a photo? And the guy said, no photos. And he goes, sorry, man. That's kind of the policy. I go, no worries, man. And he goes, I'll shake your hand again, though. He really did. He put his hand out.
How fucking awesome if you would have been like, I'm good. I'm good with the first handshake.
I already got one. Yeah.
I really want the photo, not another physical interaction.
I want like a 1 megapixel photo of you and I. But you know, if he would have said yes to the photo, that shit would be my profile picture everywhere.
Well, so did no one else say anything to him?
Nobody else did.
As far as you could see?
I could see as far as he was, which was about a foot behind me.
I mean, as long as you were in line for another 40 minutes or whatever.
The rest of the line... At no point did I like turn around and look at him, but I never heard anybody talking to him.
Wow.
I just heard him and a security guard kind of chatting. And then at one point, I was sitting by my gate and I saw him walk somewhere to get like breakfast or something. Nobody was bothering him. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know why he was in the commoner line and flying Southwest, but hey, it was a highlight for me as a Metallica fan.
Well, hey, I mean, you know, as you know, I'm a touring musician. I fly
right
every couple of weeks. And I tell you what, I still can't get one of those goddamn TSA pre's. That's a testament to how tough it is for Southwest. If James Hetfield can't get the TSA, you know, whatever, A-list preferred,
right,
then no one can.
Exactly. If Hetfield's in the commoner line, you're in the commoner line.
If the lead singer of Metallica can't do it, no one can.
Even though I was ahead of him in line, so.
That's a great story, man. I don't know what I would say to James, you know, if I met him. It would be
hard
to be cool.
I feel like I'd
be
more cool now.
You think so?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't uncool. I wasn't like...
Yeah, it sounds like you were pretty together for that.
I definitely held it together. I think the only thing I shouldn't have done was turn back around and ask for a picture.
Yeah.
Totally. That was not cool.
Yeah, the second round.
Yeah. What do you think you would say if you were standing in line and he was right there?
I don't know. I know I wouldn't be that cool.
Hey, man, want a handshake?
It would be some germy, pathetic, you know, I admire you so... You know, I don't even want to say it out loud.
It's tough when you... Like, I mean, any celebrity, especially musicians we look up to, that have been doing it as long as he has, or even half that long,
mm-hmm.
What do you say to them that hasn't already been said?
That's one...
Or does it still feel good to them to hear that? Like, oh, man, people still care.
It's like, is this going to be, it just feels like it's just going to fall on deaf ears,
right?
Which it's really not about him hearing it. It's about me saying it. So I get that too. I don't need him to like be moved by it.
Totally.
But the other thing too, is like, how do you sort of sum up, everything you've been through with this music in a conversation? Cause that's
right.
Really what it is. Like, you know, he's been in my life since I was like, you know, 12.
Right. Totally.
Pretty intimately on my end.
Right.
Just gobbling up those records and listening to them through Tough Shit and Happy Shit.
Absolutely.
And some of the best memories of my life have been, you know, the soundtrack to those moments have been Metallica records. So
for sure.
It's just so hard to distill all that into a combo.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's why I just went with, you know, you're a big reason as to why I make music for a living now.
That's good.
Because maybe that puts it into a little bit of a different perspective for him. Like, oh, wow. Like, here's this dude that's in a band that now his job is playing music and I had a part in that. That's cool. I mean, think if someone came up to me and told me that, I would be like, damn, for real? But when you're James Hetfield and you're like, well, yeah, we've sold 100 million records and whatever.
It is.
I've started a lot of careers.
God, that's almost equivalent to I'll give you another handshake.
Yeah, totally.
I've started lots of careers.
Yeah.
It is better than saying like, oh, I still have grew my hair long and I'm an alcoholic now because of your music.
Yeah, you know? Totally. You want to get a drink together? Well, I'm sober now. Fuck, I got to get sober. All I knew is I didn't want to come across as like a creepy fan.
Yeah.
I don't think asking for a photo a little bit later was necessarily creepy. It was just like a little too much. Like
I have noticed on the meet and greets that they do that they put on YouTube, James never does them.
What if that was because of me?
You started a chain reaction that has deprived fans for how many years now? 7 years?
God. Yeah, well,
I'll tell you what, you've watched those, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, totally.
So, you know,
we got to do an episode on just those.
I've seen those where, I mean, God bless these people. I mean, I'm one of them. I'm in their tribe.
Yeah.
But some of them are pretty awkward and pretty intense.
Absolutely, they are. Yeah, totally.
So compared to that, I think you did okay.
I think I did all right, yeah. And I was backstage 10 feet from Hetfield, and I just sat there and sipped on my drink, kept my cool. I didn't go walk up to him or anything like that. I was pressured to. I didn't do it.
Peer pressure, kids.
I was much stronger.
You were a stronger man. Well, yeah. that dismal 5 a.m. airport line, dude. It'll reduce you to your primal instincts.
Totally. Oh, gosh. I would be curious to, not that I'll ever find out, but just to know, like, A, what was he doing in Orange County? Was maybe when he got sober? Because in the documentary, they don't talk about where he goes.
Right.
He's just gone, you know? His family's his priority, is his health and sobriety. For all I know, he was down in, you know, down on the beach in Orange County, like at some rehab center, you know? I have no idea. And maybe he would fly down there from time to time to you know, revisit that. And
maybe he's a big surfer.
Kirk is.
Is Kirk?
Oh, yeah.
He seems like he would surf.
He's totally like new age surfer. We always joke that, you know, you brought up the cowboy hat earlier. Me and my friends always joke that, you know, when they're in their off time, like, you know, James is driving hot rods. Like Robert's a big surfer, too.
Yeah.
You know, and Lars is selling paintings.
Right.
And Kirk is riding a unicorn through a field somewhere.
I'll never forget seeing him in that cowboy hat. I just knew something was wrong. It was this bad.
Cutting
news.
His hair short wasn't enough. It was like, oh, now he's wearing a cowboy hat.
I like.
But when there's photos of Hetfield in a cowboy hat, you're like, hell yeah.
Yeah,
cool.
Well, because Hetfield's like a Texas kind of, he's kind of like a rock and roll redneck or something. You know? And I like that about him.
He owns a bunch of land in Northern California. And...
But Kurt was definitely like born in a hippie den. Like,
he for sure was.
Was he always like an Oakland or Bay Area? What's his story?
Well, he's from Exodus.
He played in the band Exodus. I know that.
Can you imagine, by the way, being Kirk Hammett and your first record you play with Metallica is like you start recording it like the day after they fired Dave Mustaine.
Yeah.
And all you're doing is basically playing his parts.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
Yeah.
I can't imagine getting into a band like that. I mean, obviously nowadays he's like, whatever, it's worked out. But
yeah, I'm sure he doesn't think about it much anymore.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, that and again, we'll do an episode on Kill 'Em All and probably talk about that. There might even be an episode just about Dave Mustaine getting kicked out.
Well, here's what's fascinating is when I think about those Kill 'Em All days and just sort of the conditions of, you know, when they talked about how they were just eating the poor man's sandwich, which was just like ham on your hand with mustard
totally.
Or something.
Yeah.
I can see everyone in that band kind of being okay doing that, except for Kirk. Like, he's almost too delicate for that life. Like, I can see Hetfield slumming it.
He is a delicate, gentle
like,
soul.
Like, how did he make it through? How did he get through until they were famous?
Yeah. I don't know.
Can you imagine him?
He doesn't seem like... I don't know, but he... I don't know. I almost think the same thing about Lars, like... You look at him now where he's like this rich dude selling paintings and mm-hmm. just, you know, almost like his excess now is just ridiculous. It's like true rich guy shit, you know?
But Lars was such a kind of like, you know, I don't want to say slimy, but he was just like a kind of streetwise, it seemed like.
Yeah.
He was like...
He also probably had a lot to prove because his dad wanted him to be a tennis player. And
right.
He moved to America and became a drummer, you know?
Right.
So he probably just did what he could. They also had, you know, when they went to New York to record that record, they were friends with Anthrax at that point and gave him a place to stay and mm-hmm. like, but yeah, I don't know.
I just can see all those other dudes being like, we're up for whatever it takes.
And Kirk's like,
I can see Kirk being like, well.
They're like, hey, you just put the ham in your hand and eat it. And he goes, ew.
I don't eat meat. Just a mustard sandwich for me.
Yeah, just pour some mustard in my hand. I'm good. Let's record Whiplash. Oh man, we'll get to for those listening. We really are going to get to so many different subjects on this podcast. Every episode will be something different. Clint and I, even just last night, met up at a local bar here and just talked about so many things we could cover with this podcast. I've got a list going already of at least 60 to 70 things, and it's growing. So,
yeah, and here's the deal. I mean, if you're like us, you're living your life somewhere, and you still love this band as much as we do, and there's just so much less opportunity to be a part of a community of people who are talking about it. So that's what this is all about, is sort of celebrating this band and like providing a place where we can sort of like be these nerds that we've always been about.
Absolutely.
This band.
Yeah. And if, you know, if you're following along with all these episodes, you know, if one all of a sudden pops up about something about Metallica that you hate, like a Saint Anger, a Load or Reload, Black Album, even, still listen to it, because we want you to get angry about it. We want to hear feedback from you. We want to have you on the podcast. If somebody emails us and is like, I hate you guys for talking about this record and I disagree with everything about it, you would be fun to talk to.
That's right.
I want to know why you hate this record so much, or why, you know, or why you love Saint Anger so much and I hate it, you know.
I'd love to hear from someone who truly loves that record. I would love to hear the, I would love to hear that.
Yeah, it would be interesting, because I think we talked about this before. I would assume that you're such a big Metallica fan that you've just kind of convinced yourself that it's good. It's like being in like an abusive relationship. Mm-hmm. You just, well, you don't really see the good side of it. You know, you don't, they
it's
really,
some Stockholm
they
syndrome.
Really, yeah, they do care, you know.
Or somehow, or if it's like a kid like me with sort of Load and Reload, that was their first taste of it.
Oh, for sure there is. I mean, Metallica has, I mean, it's a generational thing now. Like,
for sure.
It even is with me. Like, not, you know, I got into them, you know, on their fourth record, and it still wasn't even their biggest record.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure even at that point in my life, if there was some older dude that I met, he might be like, oh, you're too young, man. Like, I've been into them since 83, you know?
Yeah.
That's probably still how it is for a lot of fans, but I mean, Metallica is going to be one of those bands that will continue to gain fans.
Yeah, I think so.
The Black Album still sells on average 2,000 to 3,000 a week.
It's crazy.
My friend sends me SoundScan reports every week of just random shit, new releases to whatever, and he always includes the Black Album.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't sell 2,000 of any of my stuff, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that record will live as long as people still listen to records.
Totally, yeah.
And as long as people are still investigating and care about metal music, for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, that record will stand the test of time. I mean, it's one of the best-selling records of all time, you know? It's like 16, 17 million just in the U.S., I think. It's crazy.
Yeah, and like, how many hits did it have? Which is crazy to think about in terms of metal. I mean,
Enter Sandman, Sabbath True, Wherever I May Roam, Nothing Else Matters. Yeah, I mean, it just those songs alone, I mean, are more than most artists will have on a record as far as singles that get successful.
Right.
You know, I mean, that record was unstoppable.
Yeah.
Which we will get into on the Black Album episode.
That's right. You guys got to come check it out.
Yeah. So we're going to wrap it up here, I think, as you hopefully have gotten to know us a little bit, gotten to know our story, why we like Metallica, our experiences with seeing them, meeting Hetfield in the airport, all that good stuff. But yeah, we're going to, like I said before at the top of the episode, we're going to cover the entire map of Metallica as best we can, documentaries, all that stuff. Even like the Behind the Music episode of VH1, which is awesome. So yeah, I guess all that to say, thanks for listening to episode one.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Episode two, go right into it. It's the Kill 'Em All episode, and we're going to cover a lot of traction on that one. We're going to go track by track for sure.
That's right.
Talk about a lot of other stuff about it. So yeah, be sure to follow us on social media, and on Twitter, it is Metal Up Your PC. Couldn't fit podcast in there, so Metal Up Your PC. On Instagram, it's Metal Up Your Podcast, and also go to metalupyourpodcast.com to subscribe, listen to all the episodes, and send us an email. Give us your feedback. Hate us, love us, agree with us, disagree. We want to hear from you. I guess that's it, right?
Yeah. Metal Up Your Podcast.
Metal Up Your Podcast, everybody.
Peace.
Adios.
You were our advisor, what would you say? Then I would say, delete that.